Spend 5 minutes watching international news, and you'll notice that immigration has become one of the defining political issues of our time. But while many countries are asking the same question, they're all arriving at very different answers. In America, immigration enforcement is unmistakably state-led. The federal government has made deportations, border security, and workplace raids a central part of its agenda. While in Ireland, public protests over asylum accommodation have grown alongside a government that has simultaneously increased deportations and tightened parts of its immigration system. Citizens are applying pressure, but it's still the state that ultimately carries out enforcement. Here in South Africa, things are different. Because the question isn't simply, what should government do? It's why hasn't government done it already? And people take the law into their own hands. Movements like March and March didn't emerge in a vacuum. They emerged because a growing number of South Africans believe there is a gap between what the law says and what the state is actually capable of enforcing. My guest today has built a reputation for analyzing South African politics through a lens that repeatedly reminds us that while leadership matters, institutions matter even more. While many of us are caught up in personalities and political headlines, she tends to ask a different question. What are institutions doing and not doing? Political analyst Riboni Tau joins me today for this important conversation. Riboni, thank you for coming and welcome. So, Riboni, we are 2 days post the June 30 deadline that everybody had made to be this huge, big thing.
Mm-mm.
And by all accounts, I don't know. What is your view? Was it a win? Was it a dud for the government? And on the other side, for the marchers and the civil society formation?
I think for me, if you look at this, I mean, there was, yes, oh, the June 3rd deadline. But, I mean, if you have listened to the March and March, yesterday's press briefing by Paga, I'm trying to pronounce his name, you know.
Phakele
Mthakathi. I mean, and they've made it clear that it's going to be an ongoing process, you know. And because the issue of illegal immigrants, I think we have left it for a very long time as a country. And fortunately, I have a background being in the NGO sector, having worked on peace and security issues in the African continent, having traveled to so many countries in the African continent that are in conflict, and having engaged with a lot of immigrants, you know. But I think the issue at this point is that until when, you know, and I think what March and March and the other groupings have been able to do is really put this thing on the agenda of the South African government. I was listening to Supra Mahumapelo, the Portfolio Chair Committee of International Relations, and he does also mention that in the recent SACU meeting that took place, the president did put it on the agenda, you know. And it can't be just an event. It needs to be on the agenda until the matters are resolved, until our borders are strengthened for security reasons, because we can't have a country where we have people that we can't account for. We don't know who they are, where they come from. The crime is too high. And yes, we're not saying only stand by migrants. Even South Africans do crime, you know. But with a South African, we know that we can trace you, you know, in terms of you've got a documentation, an ID, you know, you're in the system. But with illegal immigrants, they're not in the system, you know. So, and I always say, how SADC has always dealt with issues at a multilateral level, or even the African Union. In 2020, we were chairing the SADC, the AU, and the theme was Silence the Gun 2020. And it was during COVID. But we do not even do anything as a South African government in terms of silencing the gun 2020. If you follow Mozambique, what happened in Cabo Delgado, you know.
Well, today we've got more conflicts on the African continent than even during the 80s, armed conflicts today.
Exactly. So if you're not going to deal with those conflicts, you're not going to hold governments accountable, you know, you are going to have the movement of people, because most of these people are economic migrants, you know. So now you need to say to your counterparts that we can't carry the burden. Take responsibility for your citizens.
So you mentioned that, you know, this has been an ongoing, and it's almost cyclical. I think you could, if you map out when we have these kinds of outbursts against kind of, in particular, African migrants coming into the country and within communities, how communities react and respond, it's almost cyclical. You can look at the rate at which it comes. And it is linked in a particular way to economic strife. So when our economy is struggling, this is when the pushback happens. In your view, why is it that the government has failed to grapple with this immigration issue and all of the concomitant parts?
I think, you know, because if you look at our history, the ANC being a liberation movement, you had many people that went to exile, whether PAC members, AZAP, and so forth, and being hosted in countries like Zambia, Tanzania, Angola, Mozambique, and they have felt indebted to the African countries. And that's why there's an interview that Winnie Mandela does, and she speaks about the issue of how we opened our borders too early in the 90s, and she was against that. And these are the consequences of opening those borders too early, because we had not dealt with our own issues domestically as a nation, coming out of an apartheid era, you know, and saying, okay, what kind of a South Africa do we want? What kind of a South Africa do we want to build? If you listen to people like former President Thabo Mbeki, you know that he was very passionate about African Renaissance and all that, you know. And I think this week he had something that he hosted around the issue of migrants. But I think they're not really interrogating the impact of this, and especially in the poor communities with those limited resources that are there. So, and that's why the ANC for the longest time has not really dealt with this issue of migrants. I mean, if you look at 2021 local government elections, they tried to not speak on it. Yet people like Action SA, Patriotic Alliance, and that's how they got into council, because it was high on the agenda for them. And they knew that this is what South Africans want to hear. Whether you say it's a populist and everything, but South Africans are saying enough is enough, you know. But through the white paper, when Motsoaledi was still a Minister of Home Affairs, you could see that there's that shift from government side, you know, to say we really need to deal with the issue of migrants and so forth. But, I mean, I was listening to the Secretary General of the ANC, Fikile Mbalula, speaking on that even when they were in exile, you know, they were not everywhere, you know. And yes, I mean, the governments knew who's where and how many people are in the country. But you know, we don't know how many Mozambicans are in the country, how many Zimbabweans are in the country, because yes, some are part of the system, but some are not in the system, you know. How many Tanzanians are in the country? I mean, Tanzania just had its elections. Nowhere in Africa a president wins elections by 90%. But it happened in Tanzania.
Like 97.
and no one says anything. Yeah. We just move on, you know. Mm. I mean, if you look at the composition of that cabinet, you can see that it's a dictator that's leading, you know. And if you're going to have Tanzanians leaving Tanzania, coming down to the south, and not dealing with some of these issues.
So Before we went on camera, I was just talking about how, I mean, the immigration issue is on the agenda all over the world. Everybody is talking about it. Whether it is the way that the state is responding in America and then forcing their visa overstays and kind of undocumented immigrants, or whether something that's a little bit of a hybrid between what the US is doing and what is happening here in South Africa is Ireland, where you see people taking to the streets, particularly about immigration centers and where immigrants are housed within their communities, and the government responding and really responding to the feedback that they're getting from the people and increasing deportations and scrutinizing the people who are given status, immigration status into their country, refuge, whether it be refugee or whatever else. Versus here in South Africa, where the people, the Dudulas, the March and March, all of those people seem to have lost confidence in the ability of the state to do the work. And therefore, you see those people taking on the mantle of going house by house, checking people's identities, enforcing even the deadline. The 30 June deadline was them enforcing a deadline that says, we want you gone. What does that signal for the dynamics of how people in civil society are believing in the ability of the state to enforce its own regulations? And what does it mean for future elections? What does it mean for the state's power in other environments too?
Okay. I think one must start by saying the civil society, one thing I've picked up, is divided on this thing. You have those who are champions of human rights who will say you're violating, you know, rights of migrants or illegal migrants and so forth, you know. And I say there's a difference between illegal and legal migrants. And we need to separate the two, because when you're an illegal migrant, you have broken the law. We're guided. There's international laws, you know, guiding us in terms of UN conventions and so forth, you know. Now, as I say, yeah, the civil society is divided into those groups. You know that there's been also some court cases in the past, like I think Helen Suzman Foundation and so forth, who have taken such matters to court and so forth, you know. And then you have, yes, your... And I think if we really to look at it, maybe it can also be around racial, because those who are seen maybe to be black are seen to be anti, and who are seen to be white are seen to be pro, you know. So maybe we should actually interrogate the different civil society groupings, which ones are pro, which ones are anti, you know. And I think we have not done that to actually look at it around also racial lines, because if we were to also look at that, it will help us, because we are a rainbow nation, because we need to find something that unites us also as South Africans across racial lines, you know, and how we deal with these things. The other thing which one must appreciate, since this much and much thing, is that in terms of government, I mean, one of the municipalities that since Madlanga Commission I've been zooming into is Ekurhuleni, because I think it's very... what has happened in Ekurhuleni for the longest time, it's sad, you know. And so I've been following them quite a lot, and I've seen some of the work that they've been doing around these bylaws and regulations. I mean, I think in the past month they've inspected 180 small businesses around the municipality, and they have helped 28 small businesses, which include also spaza shops. You know, they've looked at hijacked buildings. You know, there was one high-shack building, I saw the footage. Shacks were built, like 20 shacks. So that must then say to us, okay, if you have 20 shacks inside this floor or this building, these people are using electricity. That means it's illegal. Water, it's illegal. and they're not paying for those services. What implications does this also have at a municipal level, you know, in terms of the same things that we cry about every day, that the municipalities are not delivering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but the revenue, how much is the municipality getting? Because then you've got water and electricity that is being used every day by a huge number of people and it's not being paid for, you know, and that means that then there's limitations for municipalities to service its own people, you know, people who are paying for those services, you know. So those are some of the things that and then also Home Affairs needs to come on board, because it's only Home Affairs that can verify, you know. So and I mean, there's been incidents where we've seen reports of Home Affairs officials who've been implicated in some of this selling of documents. Those people are not patriotic. No South African can sell their country to that extent. So we need to have civil servants that, we know when we say Batopili principle, they need to know what it stands for, what it means, what that flag means, to be patriotic, you know. And that's why those who are standing up, that seem to be xenophobic. But these people are merely saying, let's protect the South African flag. You know, I mean, I was looking at, as you're saying, that it's not unique. I was looking at even the UK and so forth. People are holding their British flag because they're saying we're protecting the flag. We're not racist. We're not, you know, and so forth. Because that's the reality, that if we're to, and also, but it needs also a change of mindset from us as South Africans.
In what way?
You know, I tell people, let's go, maybe let's say in the early 2000, because most of the spaza shops were still run by South Africans. You go to a spaza shop to go and buy something. Coco, knocking, and someone is watching The Bold and the Beautiful. I think those were the days of our lives. Now, you don't want to stand there busy knocking at a door, because you're waiting for someone to come and serve you. So it needs that mindset. People need to know that I'm running a spaza shop. I should be sitting there. Secondly, it also needs, and this also will also help, because one of the things that we have not looked at, these guys who are running the spaza shop, this is a trade war, because they take the prices down because they buy in bulk. And that's why you find that South African spaza shops then die, because their prices are normal prices that a normal spaza would be selling its items on. So it's also a trade war. So this, the mindset also means that South Africans must come together and look at also buying things in bulk, so that, because the economy is bad, so that the prices can go down, you know. So it means that mindset of the unity, because these guys we've seen, these are lessons that we can learn, that they're united. And also closing early. Most of the spaza shops will close early. These guys operate until 10 in the evening. Because you must remember, there's that security guard who leaves at 5 or 4 in the morning and comes back, knocks off at 6 and comes back to the township maybe at around 8, half past 7. And they still want to go and get something from the spaza shop.
So, Riboni, I mean, you're touching on so many different aspects of some of the things that, as I've been listening over the past couple of days, even people who were marching themselves, the various gripes. So they've all come together from various places, right? There are those who are complaining about economic impact. There are those who are complaining about drugs in their communities. There are those who are complaining about low wages being driven down. So there's an umbrella of gripes that people are raising. And you are talking about a mindset change, which leans into what a lot of people who have been anti any of these kind of movements, saying that it is a fallacy that South Africans cannot work as hard as migrants, do not want to work as hard as migrants, are unwilling to do this and that. You are leaning into that. But I think a more important question for me is, how do these legitimate gripes that people may have, that they want to raise in their constitutionally enshrined way of marching and raising their voices and organizing around these issues. When does that shift over into vigilantism? And how then can we guard against that? The legitimate concerns and these movements themselves becoming tyrants.
Okay. Then let me clarify. South Africans are not lazy. And when I say mindset change, I'll give you an example. On the 16th of June, it was a public holiday. And because we are very chilled as a nation, you know, I walked around, actually drove around in Soweto, and I realized that most of the shops that I know that are owned by South Africans were not operating on that day. And it's because we're a chilled nation, so it's a holiday, people just want to relax, you know, and take it easy and so forth, you know. When you run any business, you need to be disciplined. You need to understand when you run a business, it's 24/7. You know, there's no free time. And secondly, I think also labor unions have failed South Africans. In the context of cheap labor, you can't expect me to wake up on a public holiday to go and work for, let's say, 15 rand an hour. That's exploitation. And this is why labor unions must come on board and fight the system that exploits. Because that system is exploiting those migrants. It's exploitation. You know? So the mindset, I'll give you an example. I always say to people, in 1994, the ANC promised us free houses, free education. So the mindset starts with that. It's because today people don't pay for raids because in the 80s, the ANC was saying boycott. But post 1994, the ANC never said to the people, we're saying boycott because we wanted to collapse the system. Now we need to pay for raids. We need to pay for services because we need that money to run these municipalities. So the mindset starts with that. You know, that things need to be done differently. Things were done differently during apartheid. It's because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Most people will tell you that I don't want a free house. I want land so that I can build my own house. Because we've seen also like there's a backlog of housing and so forth. And some of these houses, are occupied by migrants. And we should ask ourselves why. Why as South Africans are we allowing that? You know, one of the things when I looked at, as I was saying, I've been looking at Ekurhuleni, the city will go in with EMPD in terms of bylaws, close the spaza shop today because the person doesn't have the right documents. The person is an asylum seeker. You must remember that this permit also, it's like, I'll give an example. There's what we call the spouse permit, right? The spouse permit is when you are married to a South African, but it needs to have an endorsement, that spouse permit, to operate a business or to work in South Africa. If it does not have, you can't work in South Africa. You can't run, you can't work and so forth. Now, these people, they have this permits. They come and rent my place and put a shack. The government comes through the municipality in terms of bylaws. You find that I have not followed the bylaws. I've just built that room and leased it out. I didn't go to the municipality to even submit a plan, you know, to show that I'm extending the house and there's going to be this part and so forth. I, as a South African, have got, I must also take responsibility because I might be harboring people in my yard who I don't even have documents. We've seen on Tuesday, the deputy mayor of Mangaung, who's married to a foreigner, where they were harboring, I think, 28 illegal foreigners. That can't be acceptable. You know, some people are defending the deputy mayor because she's a woman. And I'm like, you choose your partner. When you hold a public office, it's in your best interest
to be with someone who's got something to lose. If you're with someone who's got nothing to lose, you'll find yourself compromised like this. She's compromised right now. The ANC is going to the most difficult elections, and people can use that to say, look at them. They're busy getting married to foreigners. They're harboring illegal foreigners in their properties and so forth, you know. It's of great concern. So who becomes your life partner is very important, so that you don't get compromised as a leader, you know. So I also have got a responsibility that in my yard, I can't just put up a room and then bring people without proper documentation. I must make sure that these people comply in terms of bylaws. Linda, as someone who owns that place, I must make sure that I've submitted a plan to the municipality. And I've seen also in Ekurhuleni what they've done. In some of these parcel shops, they've even said to South Africans, we can help you, you know, because to take over, yeah, because there's that budget for small business and so forth. I know tomorrow on Friday, they're having something for youth and entrepreneur, you know, which is good because the timing is good as we are in this era to help youth, because the youth is unemployed and there's no jobs. But we need an environment that is conducive, that can make the youth to excel in whether in business and so forth and help them.
So what is this signal in your view, in your analysis, the dynamic that was created by a civic society led movement like March and March, setting a deadline? We don't know how they decided on that deadline or why that deadline. Setting a deadline and mobilizing around it, and the government responding in the way that they did to this deadline. So they essentially changed a timeline for the government. What does that signal about the power dynamic that not just this organization, but that people still have to hold and move government machinations?
I'll go back to yesterday's press briefing again, because they were asked about that meeting that they had with the president the night before.
On Monday night, yeah.
The president, it's alleged, what they said in the press briefing, he was asking them to shift the deadline of the 30th, not to have that national shutdown. And they said it's too late. It's not going to be possible. So that shows that the power of the people, they're able to set the tone for government, because government seems not to be acting when it's required to act, you know. And they told the president that it's not possible. But what they promised the president is that there will be peaceful marches. And I think that's all we wanted, also peaceful marches. We did not want to see what happened in 2008, where you had over 60 people lose their lives. If you remember, it was between South Africans and migrants. And I think just across the freeway, Alexandra also was, had a huge impact in 2008. We also did not want to see what we saw, the July unrest in 2021, because billions were lost, you know, and the implications of that. People lost their jobs. We did not want to see that. So it's good that the marches were peaceful, but it shows that we might be going back. You know, today we look back, and I think we have not actually interrogated this. Actually, I'm actually thinking about it as I'm sitting here. This year marks 50 years since 1976. And 1976 happened in June, and the deadline was 30th June. So 50 years later, today, we have, as a nation, defined our mission and where we want to go as a country. The generation of 1976 also fought the system then. And today, much and much is not fighting illegal immigrants. And I think that's a mistake we're making. And the other groupings, they're fighting a system, the government, to say, do your job. Do what you have promised the people of South Africa. It's to protect citizens, it's to put citizens first, is to deliver on your mandate. Because the government, politicians are given a mandate. We're going to elections on the 4th of November. Citizens are going out to go and vote. And they're going to give, you know, I was saying earlier on Tuesday, I had a meeting in Rosebank. I decided to use public transport. So I took the train, normal metro rail train. Then when I got to the CBD, I took a taxi. In the taxi, it's funny how people were talking, because I like raw news. That's why sometimes I use public transport, just to listen to what people say. And they were talking about how for the first time they see Joburg CBD so peaceful and clean. One of the ladies was like, you know, the white people that I see in Rosebank, I used to see them in Joburg in the 90s. Today I no longer see them because they fear for their lives. And people are saying, now they're going to go and vote on the 4th of November. That's what this thing has done. It has revived that spirit. People who were demoralized, who might see a higher voter turnout in their local government elections because of this.
So speaking of the higher voter turnout, the leader, Jacinda Ngobese Zulu, made a very specific shout out from her podium about the parties that supported their movement, and very specifically instructing that those are the people to be supported in the election. Which raises a very interesting dynamic too. Do you think that this higher voter turnout that you anticipate will translate into more votes for, in particular, the MK?
I don't know. You know, and I'll go back to yesterday's briefing. I think yesterday's briefing was very interesting. It talks about, and you can see that there's that thin line split between these groupings, you know. And it talks about the other grouping says we don't want people with party regalia, because this is not about partisan, it's about the flag. And then you have Jacinta, you know, speaking all publicly around the political parties.
And not for the first time.
She addressed them in an MKP march and that took place in Etegwini a few weeks ago. So, yes, there's that. But this election, it's not going to be about MKP. This election is going to be about, in each municipality, who are the candidates that are going to be fielded? So in Johannesburg, we've got Helen Zilla, we've got Herman Mashaba, we've got Lekano, we've got who again? I think there was a three that I get. Oh, the IFP Mabaso. We're waiting to see who's the ANC going to field. This election is going to be about credible candidates, people who, especially in the metros, who can clean up the cities. I always tell people, I've been to London, I've been to Paris and other countries. I've never seen in any of those cities a huge number of immigrants having taken over the cities. If you look at Johannesburg today.
Well, so I think Paris has a different perspective on how immigrants have changed that city. Mm. I think the Parisians would have something to say about that.
So if you look at right now, I mean, I was looking at, you know, how much does a flat in Bioval Beria cost? Have you checked?
No.
Okay, let me tell you. You can get a 2-apartment bedroom for 130,000. I was saying to someone, if I had the money right now, I'd be buying
property. Buying up the city well.
Yeah, because that's how cheap they've gone. But if we know that we're going to have a mayor that's going to come and clean up the city, you know, it's a good investment, long term. So this election are about the candidates more than anything. I've got a friend who lives in Pretoria. His home is Eastern Cape. And he used to live in Cape Town. And this person says, if Lungisa is going to be put up in Nelson Mandela Bay,
I'm definitely going to go and vote in Eastern Cape. But if the ANC does not put Lungusa as a candidate in the Eastern Cape, I'm not going to vote in Eastern Cape. I'm going to vote in Western Cape. So this election is about who do you think?
Well, they're not going to be able to do that.
Because the voter registration is coming, the last one.
Mm.
Yeah, it's coming, the last one. Just I think probably around September, or we should have the last voter registration weekend. So people are going to go and change their...
You think people will change their registered voter district?
Yeah.
If they believe in particular...
I mean, if you know that... I'm giving an example, because this guy is saying, this person stays in Cape Town, in Pretoria. That means they are prepared to go and fly to Eastern Cape on that vote, on the 4th, to go and vote in Eastern Cape if Lungisa becomes a candidate, because they believe in Lungisa. Those are people with the resources, right? But there are people who might have been sitting right now, they didn't go to this voter registration. But once the candidates are all out, for the voter registration, we might see a lot of people getting up from their houses to go to the IEC voter registration to do the last voter registration before the local government. So these elections are going to be about personalities, not about political parties. It's going to be about which candidate I feel can bring back what we used to have in this municipality.
So in the lead up to the march, there's been, depending on who you ask, if you ask Daily Maverick, it's the Russians. If you ask Twitter, it's the Israelis. If you ask, there's been lots of talk. And in fact, just 2 days before everything came out, before the 30th, there was lots of talk about Jacinta attending in the US a particular, I don't know, 3-week course or whatever. So there has been lots of talk about external influence and resource allocation, external, in order to bolster this movement, in order to give it direction, to give it strategy, and particularly to disrupt the government of South Africa. What do you think of that?
You know, I'm writing a book at the moment. And in my book, I was asking someone, and I said to them about... if liberation movements still represent the aspirations of its citizens, which means Chama Chama Pinduza in Tanzania, Frelimo in Mozambique, ANC in South Africa, SWAP in Angola, ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe. And the response was that these things are being sponsored. And I think... whether they're being sponsored or not, the question is that are these issues not legitimate that are being raised? Because you can't have so many South Africans saying enough is enough. Yes, you can give me 5 rand to go and mobilize, but the people already, they're in that mode. Because the people live in these communities every day, you know, where this crime is happening and the limitations of resources, whether jobs, as we spoke about, so many issues that they've raised, you know. So, I mean, we know that there is tensions between Israel and the South African government and the US. But we can't give credit to them for everything that we're seeing through these marches. We know also that there's the element of Russia and so forth. I mean, those are global dynamics. That's the reality. I mean, we've seen that former President Zuma is currently in India meeting with the Guptas, you know. These things are there. He's been going to Morocco. I'm just saying.
What do you think that's about? what is your analysis? What do you decode from the timing of his visit to the Guptas, and even before that, to Traore? And what are these simply, you know, the machinations of an old man still seeking relevance? Or is this a master strategist taking advantage of something that has taken root?
I think what's funny, yesterday Makasela Mzome, who recently resigned as the head of presidency, tweeting about...
I saw that.
Mani, that he must take accountability for the Gupta trip to India. It's more about the foundation. But they've been going to Morocco, him and Zuma. And we don't know in Morocco what they've been doing there. Oh, understand. That's the reality, that every political party will have friends, whether wrong or right. You know, if they see Moroccans as their strategic allies. The same Morocco, when he was in the ANC, was saying that we need to fight for the people of Western Sahara and so forth, you know, and to get independence from Morocco and so forth. So these things are also ideological. I don't like to get too much into ideological, because I think ideology doesn't put food on the table for our people. Our people want basic things, jobs and so forth. But the reality of the matter is that when you are also, as I'm saying, that you have global dynamics that takes place, there might be, yes, money that then there. Because even running any organization, I'll give you an example. So many NGOs get money from all over the world. We don't know where Helios Suzman gets their funding from, you know. Why must we specifically pin on this group? Let's look at all the civil society groups. They don't get money from the South African government. They get money from everywhere in the world. Why particularly this grouping? Are we isolating them? So we need to have an honest conversation, because the reality of the matter is that South African government is not funding most of these NGOs that does good work on the ground. And that's why people have to go and look for money elsewhere, you know. Whether wrong or right, which country, which institution, is another thing, you know. So every civil society grouping has got its own mandate and advocacy that they're pushing for, you know, and they get money from different funders and so forth, you know. But the question we should ask, as I'm saying, that are these issues not legitimate that are being asked? Or that are being raised. I'll give an example. There's something very interesting that people are not observing. So I speak to two people before the 30th March deadline. We know that in Soweto, the battle between IFP and the ANC was very rife. The Zulus and the Sotos was very rife.
The hostels and the community.
People died. But today I can tell you, people are saying, we thank the Zulu Nation for standing up. This is long overdue. I know a person who said to me, we have a history in Soweto of the issue of the violence around the hostel and IFP. We've lost families. But this person says, I'm going to vote IFP because I believe in Mabaso. He's been consistent on the issue of cleaning up the city as the MMMC for housing or human settlement in Johannesburg. Right. But he acknowledges the role that it played in Soweto, the IFP. But he says, today, I'm going to give them my vote. So this thing has really made people to change even their outlook and their mindset because of the struggle that we face. Sometimes, you know, we can speak and say, ah, these people are sponsored and what. It's nice. You're living in Sandton, high halls. You've got security around you 24/7. You are able to afford a security company that you pay monthly. You've got an alarm system in your house, you know, and things like that. Your car has got a tracker and so forth. Why have all these things if you feel safe in this country? Why have them? There's someone there who does not have all the systems that you have. You don't go to a public clinic. Your kids don't go to a public school.
So, I mean, I think my last question with regard to that, is it's clear from the way that you talk that the state has all but lost control. They've lost control of the borders. They've lost control in terms of all of the corruption that happens within the system, and that this has been a major pushback from the people who have lost faith in or confidence in the state and the state's ability to enforce its own laws. If we were to futurescape 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what would it look like when the state regains that control? How visibly different would the borders be? Would
I think what we need, and this is the biggest mistake that I think the current administration is doing. So on the national dialogue, I think they don't know what was the purpose of the national dialogue. The national dialogue, when the conversation started, it started in Drakensberg, the Kgalema Motlanthe Foundation. But it got hijacked along the way. That national dialogue was about to say, we need to reset. The 1994 deal long collapsed. And I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I was making an example. There was a dialogue that they held, I think the first one. It was during the Springbok were playing that weekend.
Mm.
And I'm like, how do you have a national dialogue?
They had at UNISA.
Yeah, when Springbok is playing. Like, how do you? Doesn't make sense.
Mm.
You say national, but the national team is playing and you go and host this thing. You are dividing us as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at, trying to see how many white people are there. You are dividing us as a nation.
Mm.
Mandela said we are a rainbow nation and we must live by that.
Mm.
You know? So it starts with that we need to have that reset and we need to bring everyone across tribes, across racial lines into one room. We need to professionalize the public service. Because it was more politicized.
Mm.
And I was listening to President Mbeki speak about how the 2008 xenophobia attacks took place, according to him, and how he got the intelligence report after those attacks. The question is, why didn't you get the intelligence report before those attacks?
Mm.
That means, and we remember the likes of Billy Masetla, the late, he was DG of state security. They were being suspended, purged, and so forth. It's because it was politicized. You had the Scorpions being politicized. We need to professionalize a system where you don't have to have political connections to get a job in government, because you become loyal to that politician and not to the country. So if we're to get it right, it needs to start there. If we're currently on autopilot, so if we don't have a proper dialogue, national dialogue, we don't professionalize, we'll still be here. We might even be in a worse state in 5 years or 10 years from now on. But one thing I love is that we are, I think coalition politics have helped us. And I think we're on the right path. This one-party state, so it was never going to work, because the arrogancy when one party is in charge, and that's why we have this crisis, because they ignored some of these things for a very long time. You know, the other day I was on Twitter and I saw a clip, and just before the March 30th deadline, how there was a truck driven by a Zimbabwean driver, right? And he had Ethiopians or I think Somalians underneath the truck crossing into South Africa, being brought in by a Zimbabwean driver. And the other last thing that we need to ask ourselves, and the importance of neighboring countries to work with us on this is very important. South Africa is the last country. So how many countries does a Somalian cross to get to South Africa?
Mm.
Because not everyone has got a passport. Some people don't have those documents.
Mm.
People think that in other countries it's easy to get a passport. In other countries, it's very expensive to get a passport. So you have people that actually travel with, I mean, there are also stateless citizens, you know, who don't have any documentation at all, you know. So we need to deal with some of these things. So, but it needs the political will
and the right mindset. And I still maintain we need a shift of mindset from our politicians. They need to know that they're not saving their own interests. I mean, look at the Madlanga Commission about the drugs that are coming in and how senior police officials are involved in some of these things. And we see how our sisters, our brothers in the rural areas within the townships, how drugs have been infiltrated, how they're destroying our communities, you know. And it starts with, as a civil servant, protecting the badge. When you're a police officer, you must protect that badge. When you're a home affairs official, you must protect that badge, you know, because your job is to protect and serve. So we need that mindset. If we don't change that mindset, we'll forever be where we are. But I think with coalition politics, we're on the right track. They will help us to get this country right. But we need to strengthen those coalition processes so that they also bring stability into the country, with the hope that the November 2024 will help us to bring that stability in terms of maturity of our democracy. I think that's one thing that we must appreciate about South Africa, that our democracy has got strong institutions and it's able to mature in the manner that it matures. I always say to people, in 2016, it marks a decade since the ANC lost, the historical loss of Tshwane, Joburg,
many metros.
And for them to have accepted that loss, it takes a bigger person. They could have rigged those elections, but they accepted the will of the people. In 2024, they also accepted the will of the people. So for me, it's about, as South Africans, let's be responsible citizens. Let's go and vote. It's important. I don't care who you vote for, but waking up on the 4th of November to go and vote, it's very important, so that when we speak on these issues, we know that we have voted and we can hold the government accountable.
Wonderful. Thank you. And it's my favorite line, actually. It's my favorite line. People should vote and to be able to hold the government accountable because they put them there.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.